This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, powered by the Family Research Council, your embassy of faith, family, and freedom in the heart of our nation's capital. Now, here's your host, FRC President Tony Perkins.
And welcome to this Friday edition of Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, actually sitting in for Tony Perkins. Tony is the president of the Family Research Council, and I'm your humble producer and guest host today. We're again broadcasting live for the Gaylord Opryland Hotel here in Nashville, Tennessee, at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention. Been coming here for several years. This is the largest gathering of Christian communicators in the world. About 3,000, 4,000 communicators come here from every aspect of the industry. There's radio broadcasters here, television broadcasters here, there's movie producers. Got several actors here. We got a big show in line for you here today. Israel is nearing its 70th anniversary as a nation, and the U.S. moving its embassy to Jerusalem. We're honored to have David Parsons. He's the International Christian Embassy spokesperson, senior spokesperson, and vice president. We'll be talking with him about what's happening in Israel. And, there's some folks that aren't too pleased with that embassy being moved. Of course, the majority of the people in this building here at the National Religious Broadcasters are thrilled and believe it's long overdue. And black unemployment has reached an all-time low under the leadership of President Trump in the White House. Star Parker, founder and president of The Cure, Center for Urban Renewal and Education, she'll be here, always a lively guest, talking about that and her role in helping to advise the administration. And there are a number of new film screenings here at NRB this year. Actor and producer Stephen Baldwin will be here to discuss his new movie, Stains. And where are we as a nation in regards to our young men, our young boys, and the role of fathers? Trail Life USA CEO Mark Hancock, who is the leader of the Christian Outdoor Adventure Program for Boys, will be here to discuss. And, of course, all of this great content can be found on TonyPerkins.com. You can follow Tony on Twitter, at T. Perkins. You can follow me, at Russ Jones Speaks. Well, the U.S. mission to Israel has issued a warning to American citizens in the Jewish state after Palestinian Authority groups called for, quote, Day of Rage demonstrations this week to protest President Trump's decision to recognize Jerusalem as the Israeli capital and to move America's embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. And this warning comes just 2 months ahead of Israel's 70th anniversary. With us now is David Parsons, Vice President and Senior International Spokesperson for International Christian Embassy Jerusalem. David, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. Thank you, Russ.
Well, it's great to have you here with us. And, of course, we have heard of these days of rages before. How do people receive that? You have lived in Israel for quite some time. What is it like to have a day of rage projected or called for upon people?
Look, this is the Palestinian Authority trying to make a little noise, get their people out on the street. When the people, a lot of the Palestinians on this Jerusalem embassy moved, most of them have been pretty much resigned to the fact that the U.S. is going to come up at some time, and the fact they're coming now without the huge protests and all the things that we were told to fear throughout the region, destabilization, whatever, it really hasn't happened. And the Palestinian Authority and Hamas are desperate to show that this still resonates on the Arab street. If you're touching the Temple Mount in Al-Aqsa, it's a different story. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, moving the embassy, look, there are eight embassies or consulates, eight different nations that have consulates or embassies to the Palestinian Authority in Jerusalem. And for the U.S. to have one there, it's only fair. And I think they're just trying to stir something up. And we've seen these in different contexts over the years. It just means there's certain neighborhoods on the outskirts of Jerusalem, near Ramallah, near Bethlehem, that you don't go in. Right. Otherwise, the city is normal and everything is just muddling along like usual.
And before we get too far, It's Friday. Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
And we're in Purim.
We just had Purim. We're in the second day, Purim Shushan,
right,
which you can only celebrate in Jerusalem, in the walled city of Jerusalem.
Just take a minute, because, you know, we have come so far away from our Jewish roots. We are the Judeo-Christian faith.
Yes.
And we've forgotten much of that. Just take a second and explain what Purim is.
Well, look, there are two sort of extra-biblical holidays, not under the law of Moses, but the Jews celebrate. Hanukkah is around Christmas, and it's when the Greeks tried to wipe out the Jewish faith. Purim was in Persia, and it was an attempt to wipe out the Jewish people. And they had a certain enemy, Haman, that if you go back through the Bible, he was an Agagite, a son of Agag, who was the king that Saul failed to kill at the command of Samuel. And Samuel had to do it. And he was a descendant of the Amalekites. So this was actually the ancient animosity between Israel and the Amalekites coming out of Egypt in the Passover story, playing out in Persia. The scroll of Esther, there's no mention of God. It's the only book in the Bible where there's no mention of God. He is a hidden deliverer, and who he uses is a beautiful princess, a Jewish princess, and her wise uncle to deliver them. And it was the law of the Medes and Persians that they were to be destroyed, and the king sort of regrets doing this, so he passes another law. He couldn't change the first, so he passes another law that says the Jews can defend themselves.
Yes.
And they triumphed.
You mentioned something so important, the Jewish people. I've been to Israel 5 times, and what I like to say is, yes, I love Israel, but I love Israelis even more.
Yes.
And they are so stoic, and so, they persevered, and they've had to. And here we're coming up on the 70th anniversary. And do you find it amazing? I mean, so many people have tried to take them out, take them down, and 70 years and still standing, and standing strong. There isn't an app in this building right now, on your iPhone or whatever, that somebody in Israel didn't create the app.
That's right.
There's a doctor right now doing surgery on somebody that probably tried to kill him the day before. I've heard so many of those kinds of stories. Tell us about what's coming up here and the importance of 70 years.
I first visited Israel in 1982, 1983. I've lived there now for over 20 years, and I've been there through suicide bombing campaigns, through rocket wars where everyone's having to hide in shelters. And what's amazing is the resiliency of the people and the trend for Israel in all this time. It is an upward trajectory despite facing challenges that, you know, we complain in America about certain things. They have so much to complain about and so much to fear, and yet they do these happiness index surveys of different countries around the world. You know, how confident are you in your nation, your economy, how optimistic, you know, the quality of life. Americans usually come out about 50-50 on the happiness index. The Israelis always come up in the 70s, one of the happiest nations. It's amazing.
It is absolutely amazing. Well, the Israel 70 and Strong is coming up May 13, 14, and 15 in Washington, D.C.
Yes.
Family Research Council is actually a sponsor of that event, and our president, Tony Perkins, will be one of the many high-level speakers that you have coming in. What do you hope to accomplish at this?
Okay. The ACOI is the American Christian Leaders for Israel. It's a coalition of hundreds of prominent Christian leaders who have a heart for Israel, wanting to speak as one voice on Capitol Hill in Washington, especially with this Trump administration. And this is a summit to celebrate 70 years of a reborn Israel and what that should mean for us as Christians in our faith. If God is faithful to his promises to Abraham, or what he's promised to the Jewish people under his covenants with Abraham, Moses, David, then we should take confidence ourselves. If he's faithful to those promises, we serve a God who's given us promises under the new covenant. And there's so much reason to celebrate the rebirth of Israel. In fact, Paul says their ingathering, their acceptance, their restoration, it will be nothing less than life from the dead. It's like resurrection power operating in the earth in our day, in the restoration of Israel. That's something to celebrate.
Absolutely. And you know, I've often said, and this isn't a trick question, but I'll ask this question to people that maybe aren't ardent supporters of Israel. Tell me who Israel's number one ally is. No, don't answer yet. And they'll start naming, well, the United States. Well, it depends who's in office. You know who the number one ally is of Israel? It's the people in this building, and they're called evangelical Christians. Evangelical Christians have been more of an ally to the nation and the state of Israel and for its right to exist than any nation. But now we have a president by the name of Donald Trump who is keeping his promises.
Yes.
And do you find it amazing about the move to Israel? And let me ask you, do you think, does it create some other risks because of that move? Inadvertently?
Look, I think it's long overdue. I think many nations, including the U.S., have been afraid to do it. They've been intimidated. It hasn't been any real policy reason, like even-handedness, because the U.S. has had a consulate, our top diplomat to the Palestinian Authority sits in West Jerusalem. So we weren't even-handed. Those sort of excuses, they were pretexts, and we were intimidated into not doing this. And right now, it's a test of whether the Palestinians can stir up enough opposition on this Jerusalem issue. But I'm so glad Trump has gone forward, not backing down. The worst thing would have been to say we're going to do it, a few riots or something, and then you say, "Oh, this is too dangerous." He's proven that you can do it. He's challenged it, and it's the right thing. It was long overdue.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins, and we're talking with David Parsons. He's with the ICEJ. And David, real quickly in our remaining time, you have a new book, Floodgates. Just tell us real quick about that.
Okay. This is a book that unpacks the flood analogy. As Jesus said, as in the days of Noah, so shall it be in the coming of the Son of Man. That if you ask, his disciples asked Jesus, you know, what's your eschatology, the end days? He said, look, the best model is what happened in the days of the flood. And I've been having a conversation with God about this for about 15 years. I waited in order to, you know, have as full a revelation as I could. I've been astounded at what God has shown me. And I think it even has an impact on a lot of the sort of social issues, family values, some of the things that you, you know, fight and campaign for every day. It all has to do with the covenant of Noah and the one condition that God placed in there, just as when Adam was given one rule in the garden, you can eat anything here, just don't eat of that tree. Mm-hmm. Under the covenant with Noah, we were given one rule, don't eat live flesh. Mm-hmm. But it's not a dietary law. It then explains, right, you do this to have respect because we're made in God's image, and we're to make a line of separation between us and the animal world. And I make the case that we have been in breach of that covenant since the mainstream acceptance of Darwinian evolution. Right. It's a direct challenge to the one command in the covenant, erases the line between us and the animals, and we're in danger of God's judgment because of this.
Well, David Parsons, thank you so much for taking time to be with us here today. We appreciate what you're doing at the International Christian Embassy in Jerusalem. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is Washington Watch. Coming up next, there's been much to celebrate on the economic front since Donald Trump took office, especially in our urban centers where black unemployment has reached all-time lows. We're going to talk with Star Parker. She'll be here when we return.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? A lot, as it turns out, and all three are on the rise across the world. Today, almost 45.8 million people live in slavery around the world, and around 4.5 million people are slaves in the sex industry. Those who consume pornography are much more likely to seek women for paid sex, many of whom are victims of sex trafficking. Each click of pornography creates demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the sex industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. To learn more about the link between these issues and to find out how you can help stop it, go to frc.org/traffic. Again, that's frc.org/traffic.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As senior director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
It's Friday, Shabbat Shalom. This is Russ Jones sitting in for Tony Perkins. You're listening to Washington Watch. We're broadcasting live from the National Religious Broadcasters Convention here in Nashville, Tennessee, at the Gaylord Opryland Hotel. Well, you know, we've talked about several times on this show, the job market is strong right now. The 4.1% unemployment rate since the government started tracking it in 1972, the black unemployment rate had not fallen below 7% until December, but it did so under the leadership of President Trump. And we're starting to hear about President Trump's ideas and policies about inner city renewal and the poor and poverty issues. Joining us right now, someone who is deeply invested in those issues is Star Parker. She is the founder and president of CURE, the Center for Urban Renewal and Education, a think tank that explores and promotes market-based public policy to fight poverty. Star, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be with you here at the NRB convention.
And I'm just want to give a shout out to Bot Radio Network and American Family Radio Network, who take this very program. And Star, it was great to be at the Bot Radio breakfast this morning. You were honored, actually, with an award.
An amazing award. That when you just said Shalom, I thought, wow. How appropriate. The Bot Radio Network honored me with their Esther Award today.
Yes.
The day that even the whole Jewish community is celebrating Purim.
That's right.
We're reading Esther, and it is an honor. And the word Esther not only means star, but also means hidden.
Mm.
And so I think it's so appropriate for them to do that for me, because I feel often the issues that we are talking about through CURE are hidden. People think that the war on poverty is a good idea, and they still invest in this war on poverty, and have ignored the damage that the war on poverty has done to our society and to the very people that we say we're trying to help. They've been hidden. But this president focused on it during his primary. He focused again during the general election. And he kept saying that he was going to fix the inner cities. I mean, he's a builder, he's a fixer, and he just wanted to fix everything
right,
to make America great again. And he, at one point, asked blacks, well, what do you have to lose? You know, when the black left started coming down hard on him and mocking him about wanting to fix the inner cities, African Americans overwhelmingly did not vote for him. He got a bump from the last few Republican presidents and bumped up to about 8.5%. So 1,400,000 actually went in the polls and voted for him. But even with those lower black numbers, he still remained serious about fixing the inner cities. He mentioned it in his inaugural. He reminded all the country and the world that the little kids that are in Detroit are looking up at the same sky as the little kids that are in Nebraska with the same type of dream. And then he went to the Congress, and even though the, especially the Congressional Black Caucus, they're still mocking him, he said again, I want to fix this.
Right.
And so what he's done is he pulled together a opportunity initiative. He has a couple of people inside the White House that are exclusively tasked to work on these issues, and myself and one of our my colleagues are on that task force.
You know, Scripture Star says, as you know, the poor will always be among us. And having that in mind, how do you go about your work in advising administrations and dealing with poverty and helping people have a hand up and not a hand out? I know you get that.
Well, the poor might be there, but they're not supposed to be the same people, and it doesn't have to be generational. One of the beauties of America and what makes us so exceptional is that we are the exception to the rule of what was going on before we came into existence. If you were at that point in history born poor, you died poor. Well, in America, that doesn't have to be.
Amen.
If you're born poor, regardless of your set of circumstances, it doesn't matter. Your ethnicity doesn't matter. Even if you just need to be born again and start over, this is the country where your fate is not necessarily your destiny. It depends on what you desire. And what we're supposed to do is remove governmental barriers. In fact, even Dr. King's movement was about removing governmental barriers. Those were government laws that said you cannot get a quality education, you cannot start a business. So we wanted those barriers removed. What we've done as a country, though, is now we've developed about a welfare state. We have actually penalized people when they're trying to get ahead just by trying to help the poor by organizing it in Washington. And so now we're generational in trapping people in poverty. This is very different from having poor with you. When Jesus was confronted with poverty, when he saw people in need and hungry, for instance, we have a couple of stories where 5,000 were hungry, 4,000 was hungry. He did not tell his disciples, go to the Romans and have them set up a welfare state and make a food stamp program. No, he told them, bring them to me and we feed them. So I think that we've, as a body of Christ, have not assess what we've done in this collectivist mentality that if we just, you know, put them off in ghettos and give them a little bit of food and force them into these dark schools that unions control, that we're going to get ourselves better. No, what's happening now is we're three generations in. So I go in a place like Alabama, and I'm sitting there with teachers who say, oh, you run a think tank in Washington? Well, you need to think about this, because this is what we're now hearing from 14-year-olds when they come in a classroom with a black eye. Mama said, don't bring home a B on the test. My mama said, bring home a baby. Because my mama said, if I don't bring home a baby, I've got to go under my uncle because I'm going to have a baby.
Wow.
This is what we've diminished to as a result of, yes, the poor will always be there, but they shouldn't be the same. Our job as Christians in a free society is to make sure that we have conditions in our law and in communities for people to flourish if they then put their hand to the plow.
And one of the things I was reading, that your organization supports housing vouchers because they allow low-income individuals greater choice and closer connections to opportunities.
Housing, education, remove barriers. Let people go live free. You know, Judas said, you know, the older woman should teach a young woman how to live, how to love their husband, how to love their children. Well, because of the welfare state, family life has totally collapsed. So most of our impoverished don't even have a husband, but they do have children. And if it came natural for them to love them, then they wouldn't be aborting the way we are. And I'm not speaking from non-experience. I mean, I went into one of their so-called safe, legal, rare abortion clinics four times before my life was collapsed. So I understand that. So what we need are opportunities for older women to be near younger women to teach them, and housing vouchers will help that happen.
Well, Star Parker, thank you so much. It's been a blessing to have you with us as always. Let us know if we can be of further assistance, and congratulations on that award.
Thank you. I look forward to working with the Farsi, and our paths do cross a lot when we're in Washington, D.C.
All right. Star
Urban
Parker.
Cure.
of the cure. Thank you so much. Well, coming up next, Christian actor Stephen Baldwin spoke this morning at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention here in Nashville. He'll be here next when we return to discuss his new film entitled Stains.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Ornakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
Into Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones sitting in for Tony Perkins. It's Friday. Great to be with you once again, broadcasting live from the National Religious Broadcasters Convention here in Nashville, Tennessee. Well, this fall, a film based on the true story of the Graham Staines murder case. It's the story of the Australian missionary who, along with his two sons, Philip and Timothy, were burnt to death. Yes, I said that right. Burnt to death by rioters in India in 1999. Well, with us now is Stephen Baldwin, who portrays Graham Staines. He's an actor, producer, author, all around great, great guy who landed his breakthrough role in the double Academy Award winning film, The Usual Suspects. Stephen, welcome so much for joining us here. I know you've been busy.
Yeah.
Great to have you here.
I got to tell you, I'm having a lot of fun.
Are you?
Talked to Eric Metaxas a little bit. That's always fun.
Oh, my gosh. That's a whole other story.
Yeah, and then they screened the Staines movie here, and the reaction's been really a blessing. I can't tell you. Folks are really connecting with the film.
Well, I noticed that you were on location in Orissa, India.
Yeah.
I've actually been there.
Sure.
There with Gospel for Asia, who...
Yeah.
Does a lot of work down there. Tell us about what it was like to be down there and just you portraying a missionary. I've actually done that in a church play, portrayed a missionary who was killed. What was that like for you to take on that character?
As you can imagine, as you described, this has really happened.
Yeah.
You know, in 1999, an Australian missionary named Graham Staines, who had already been in the country for 15 years, with a medical clinic and a ministry to those suffering from leprosy in India, in that region, which actually in the numbers is quite low. It's been high, but the crazy thing about that is in the Indian culture, which is mostly Hindi and a bunch Muslim as well, it is considered by the Hindis, et cetera, that
those that suffer from leprosy are cursed.
Yes.
It's a spiritual curse. So they are shunned beyond, you know, your wildest imagination.
Kind of like the Dalits, right? Which is the lowest of the low in
right.
that caste
exactly.
system. Yeah.
Exactly. Graham Staines, as an Australian and a medical person, understood this could be cured, et cetera, et cetera. So he was quite a strange creature, so to speak, among the culture.
Right.
But he was quiet, and he was humble, and he was respectful, and he was gentle. And so many of those that suffered from the disease that were healed and actually came to faith in Jesus Christ, as well as many other Indians that came to faith, unfortunately, the result of his murder and his martyrdom, so to speak, comes out of really a concentration of Hindi radicals, because the proselytization of Christianity there is, you know, completely illegal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and very seriously reprimanded.
Right.
You know, so these guys, it just was a perfect storm of evil, really, when Graham was lost. But what's wonderful to me now is the recognition of the two themes of the film, which is the power of forgiveness, because Gladys Staines, his widow, and his surviving daughter, the day after this, the media showed up. They said, what do you have to say? And Gladys Staines, some of her first words were, we first want the world to know we forgive the people who did this.
Yes.
So that was the headline all over India, and now we're telling that story.
Now, when does the movie come out?
Well, it doesn't have an absolute release date now.
Yeah.
It's talking with some distributors.
Yes.
This NRB, this Proclaim 18, was a wonderful opportunity just to start to show, just slowly share it with our brothers and sisters, let folks start getting excited about it. Yeah. So it's coming soon.
One of the things that people don't realize, in India, you're born into a caste system. You're locked there.
Oh, yeah.
And we were just talking
with Star
Parker. If you're born in America in poverty, you can work yourself out. If you're hardworking, motivated,
sure.
in India,
yep.
you're there. So you tell that story.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What was the toughest part of that role for you?
Well, I really got to say, give a shout out, so to speak. Shari Rigby, who's a brilliant actress, who's in a wonderful film called October Baby. As well as, how do I say this? There's lots of young, youthful media and film talent coming out of India right now.
Mm-hmm.
But this fellow, Sharman Joshi, who plays the lead character of this journalist in the film that's pursuing all a story about
right.
this, is just another extremely gifted performer. So for me, the greatest challenge for me was Graham was so subtle. Graham was so gentle. He really was flowing in the spirit, you know, and he showed the love of God. That's one of the most powerful lines in the movie is there's this one really dramatic moment where somebody's asked this question about this sequence of circumstances and what is the truth and what is lies. And they say, what was it about this man that caused you to follow him? And the line is, he showed me the love of God.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Wow.
That's one of the great messages.
Amazing. Well, Stephen Baldwin, thank you so much. Man, someone of your stripe and your worldview, it's amazing what you're doing. It's not normal in Hollywood or typical, unfortunately.
No worries.
Bravo, bravo. Thank you so much. We'll
sure.
be looking for it. Stephen Baldwin, friends, the movie's called Staines. We'll let you know when it's coming out in the theaters. When we return, what's going on with our nation's young boys and fathers and fatherlessness? Trail Life USA CEO Mark Hancock will be here to talk about it. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. This is Washington Watch.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? A lot, as it turns out, and all three are on the rise across the world. Today, almost 45.8 million people live in slavery around the world, and around 4.5 million people are slaves in the sex industry. Those who consume pornography are much more likely to seek women for paid sex, many of whom are victims of sex trafficking. Each click of pornography creates demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the sex industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. To learn more about the link between these issues and to find out how you can help stop it, go to frc.org/traffic. Again, that's frc.org/traffic.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. You're listening to Washington Watch, powered by the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. We're live here in Nashville, Tennessee, at the Gaylord Opryland Hotel. Beautiful, beautiful place. We're at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention. It's the largest gathering of Christian communicators in the world. And I've been coming here for several years, and this convention, I must say, has transformed me personally and professionally. I've met people that have guided me, mentored me along the way, people who have had my best interest in mind. And if you're a young person out there listening here today and you have an interest in media communication, go look at the NRB website, National Religious Broadcasters. I can guarantee you, give you personal experience that there are folks here that can help you out. Well, this next topic is very dear to me. Fathering and sons. Fathering advocates say almost every social ill faced by America's children is related to fatherlessness. Data reveals six different areas, such as children living in female-headed families with no spouse present had a poverty rate of 47.6%, over four times the rate in married coupled families. And have you noticed a theme among the string of shootings that we see across our land? I've shared on this show before that I did not know nor meet my biological father until I was 30 years old. My mom divorced when I was three. She never allowed me to have a relationship with my father. Matter of fact, we would be out in public and my mom would say, "Don't you get too far away from me. Don't know who might steal you." Can you imagine growing up with that kind of fear? And then guess what, friends? Life came along. I found my biological father in Marysville, Ohio. We had a reunion. We've been in communication ever since. And I can tell you firsthand how important that has been. Well, with us now is Trail Life USA CEO Mark Hancock. And Trail Life USA is a Christian outdoor adventure program for boys. Mark, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Russ, thank you so much. Appreciate you having me.
Well, glad you're here. You're right across the hall here on the exhibit floor from the FRC booth. And you all came about because of the lack of vision and moral clarity and resolve in the Boy Scouts. Mm-hmm. And we certainly have seen where that has all gone here today in our schools and the anything goes, whatever I feel like being today movement. Tell us how it's going. You've had incredible success because there are people that really would like to see some definites in what it means to be a man, mm-hmm. and what it means to be a godly man.
Well, Trail Life USA started about 4 years ago in the wake of some decisions that the Boy Scouts of America was making. And we're a Christ-centered, unapologetically Christian, politically incorrect organization because we say things like boys and girls are different. And we say things like boys need men in their lives to help, to mentor them, to lead them, to guide them. We say things like fatherless homes, like you're talking about. Fatherless homes are one of the greatest challenges that we have in our country. In fact, you mentioned those shootings. When you look at the rise of fatherless homes and you put that next to a chart with the increase in school shootings, it's really quite remarkable, the connection between those things. So what Trail Life USA provides is a Christ-centered environment. It's an outdoor organization for boys from kindergarten through 12th grade, and we have men who are interested in mentoring young men. Now, they may have a son in the program, and they may not, but they're interested in mentoring and discipling the young men, and they understand the power of the outdoors and the life of a boy. You know, in our culture, we boys are really in crisis. And we put them there. You know, over the last 50 years, the cultural changes, the societal changes that we've seen, haven't paid attention to young people at all. Mm-hmm. You know, when we legalize abortion, no one's paying attention to the effect that would have on children. You know, when we have the gender blurring that's going on today, nobody's paying attention to what that really means to kids. But it's confusing them about who it is that they are, and who it is that they can be. So we set that cornerstone again, based on biblical values, that says that boys and girls are different. Boys need an outdoor adventure organization. They need the influence of Christian men in their lives. And it's growing rapidly. We're in 48 states now, coming up on 27,000 members. Wow. And over 750 churches. And,
wow.
And boys are being ministered to. Single moms are finding a place to put their sons so they can have that positive Christian influence that you talk about in their lives.
You know, I was reading actually this morning that the Boy Scouts of America has decided to do more background checks, mm-hmm. because of whatever they're seeing with problems and issues with some of their leaders. And I'm sure you do that, but you do a much different kind of background check as well, and that's got something to do with the Word of God, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's a heart check too. Before an adult joins our organization, of course, we do a criminal background check. Boy Scouts just does it once in the lifetime of it. We do it every few years. We run another check on that adult. We do a criminal background check. We do child safety youth protection training. They do a two-hour class that they take in order to understand how to work with young people and how to protect young people. But then they also sign our statement of faith and our statement of values, which says things that sound radical now but used to be pretty much accepted. Things like it defines marriage, it defines the roles of our gender, talks about things like purity and integrity and stewardship and service. So they agree with those things before they can participate in our organization as adults.
Now, are you seeing people come to Trail Life that have a Boy Scouting background? And you're probably now, you've been at it 4 years, you're seeing people that have had no experience,
yeah.
I would imagine.
Well, it's remarkable. At the beginning, it was a lot of Boy Scouts, about 50% of our initial troops. We opened on our first day with almost 10,000 members.
Oh, my gosh.
And about half of those were from troops that were formerly Boy Scout troops. And the churches that chartered those troops understood they were threatening their legal standing if they continued to charter that Boy Scout troop, because the Boy Scouts now had a different definition of marriage and sexuality than they had as a church. So a lot of those moved over immediately. But since then, we're seeing more and more churches that never had a Boy Scout troop. But they see, in over 107 years in Boy Scouts history, they never started a troop. But they look at Trail Life USA and they say, that we want, that we need to have in our church, because we consider ourselves an outreach of the local church.
So even before the Boy Scouts kind of had their fall, so to speak, mm-hmm. churches even didn't like what they saw there.
Well, over the years, what had happened, and this is one of the mistakes we believe the Boy Scouts made, is that they lost their connection with their chartering partner. Mm-hmm. If the chartering partner was a church, they just kind of lost the connection. Now, they may be meeting in the basement of the church, but they weren't really, those adults may not have even gone to that church. Right. But in Trail Life USA, we consider ourselves an outreach of that local church. That institutional head of that church, whether he's a pastor, a priest, whatever his role in that church, he is overseeing it, and he has a representative that's directly involved in the management of the troop. So whereas a Boy Scout troop, you could have they're just meeting in the church. With Trail Life, they're doing some Sunday morning services. They're doing service projects around the church. They're bringing young men into the churches. This is an amazing thing. A boy may not invite his friend to a Bible study or something, but he will invite his friend to go hiking or bouldering or zip lining or something like that. And that unchurched boy joins the troop, and then the unchurched family joins the church. And so the churches that have chartered Trail Life USA troops are seeing a growth in their congregation, and that's something you wouldn't have seen through Boy Scouts.
I would imagine you see a lot of young boys that come that are longing, and I understand that, you know, a Trail Life leader can't replace completely that father figure. Yeah. But do you do training when it comes to that? You know, I remember when I was a kid raised by a single mom who was an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. Just give me somebody normal in my life.
Yeah.
Give me somebody that's a kind of a man, mm-hmm. even though I didn't say that then. Just give me a guy's guy that would take me out and fishing. My grandfather, who had a sixth grade education and a girly tattoo from the Navy up his left arm and smoked 3 packs of Marlboros a day, that wasn't exactly what I was looking for, but he was a very strong figure in my life. Yeah. And he may have been academically not very educated, but he was a wise man.
Yeah.
And I bet you have a lot of guys looking for that,
guys. We do. And because it's in a troop setting, those men are around other men. And so it's a tribe of men that are raising that young man. So he's getting what he needs. I met a man out in Texas not too long ago, and he talked to me about a real interest he had in ministering to fatherless boys in his troop, and that he really intentionally reached out to these boys to make sure they were matched up with a man who could be a father-like figure. And I asked him why he was so interested in that. And he said, when I was 9 years old, my father died. And the Cub Master of a local Boy Scout troop brought me into the troop, and he became my father-like, and it's time for me to give back. And I just thought that was such a powerful statement. I was in Washington, D.C. at a gathering, and we had a bonfire after the meeting, and a mother came up to me and said, I need to thank you. My husband passed away 10 years ago and left me with a 2-year-old son. She said, I cried out to God for men who could mentor my son, who would be in his life, and Trail Life USA showed up. Now my son is 12 years old, and he's a navigator in Trail Life USA, and he's surrounded by godly men. My husband will want me to thank you. And you wonder how many times that repeats itself over and over again.
Right.
But we are, it sounds like a bold statement, but we are the fix to this crisis that boys have. You know, they're so confused about who it is that they are. Masculinity is out the window. Mm-hmm. Chivalry is no longer appreciated.
Yes.
Who are they supposed to be? We don't allow tag in schools anymore because it's too aggressive. Or
dodgeball.
Yeah, yeah. And so we drive. So the boys want that competition.
Right.
That's one of the things that makes us great is the drive and the daring of young men. Well, we've totally removed that from them. We call it aggressiveness. And we call it like it's some kind of a social disease to be a boy. And we drive them inside to where they're in a virtual reality on these video games where they can compete and they can win, and then we criticize them for going inside and being on the video game. So they can't win.
It's so funny. I remember my son Joshua, his mom worked so hard to protect him from guns and all of that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And one day he had a stick from outside, and he's in the living room, and he jumps up on the coffee table, and he
goes, ah, and he shoves that stick like a sword into the air, and I just looked at
it. What an image.
It's in the DNA. That's you can't beautiful. Do nothing about it.
That's beautiful. Well, our award, you know, where the Boy Scouts has a sash where they wear patches, we have a walking stick that's actually harvested in Bavaria for our purposes, and they nail their metal trail badges to this thing as they earn these badges. What a powerful symbol that is.
It is.
And
a
so,
staff of
yeah,
righteousness.
And they receive that around 5th, 6th grade as part of the program. That's when they can start earning that level of award. And it's so beautiful when you see a father or a father-like. Some troops, what they'll do is they'll have these walking sticks in a barrel at the front of the room during the ceremony, and the father will come and he'll select that standard. We call it a standard. He'll select it for his son and he'll present it to his son. And then that becomes a piece that that boy is shown. This is who I am. These are my accomplishments. When you gave that image of him raising up in the air, you know, this is, and boys love sticks.
Oh, they do. Oh, they do.
So it's a powerful image.
So we, in our time remaining, we have a lot of church leaders that listen to this show, pastors. What if there's a pastor, church leader listening right now? Maybe they've left the Boy Scouts. They don't have such a program. What's the necessary steps to get a Trail Life troop in the congregation?
Well, we love pastors. We love churches. We love seeing the kingdom grow through the vision of Trail Life. So they can go to traillifeusa.com. There's information on how to start a troop, how to find a troop in your area. But it really takes a man to drive that vision. And if a pastor prays about it, a man will show up knocking on a church door saying, we need this. Now, maybe sometimes the pastor will identify that man saying, hey, I've got something for you to do. But most often it's a man who recognizes the discipleship opportunities, recognizes the power of the outdoors, then he'll go to that pastor and say, can we start a troop here? And that pastor needs to say yes. Mm-hmm. And that pastor needs to get the congregation behind that troop, help build them, help them raise funds so they can get boys into the program, you know, and they don't have to pay. So these single moms can afford to put their boys into the program, and the boys can afford to go on the camping trips and the summer adventures and experience the type of adventure. See, the key is parents love the character and leadership that we provide, and boys love the adventure. But it takes money, and it takes a church being behind those boys to help them go out and experience these things. So that's what I ask a pastor to do. Prayerfully consider if that's right for the church. Find the man for the program, or when he shows up knocking on the door, say, yes, we are here for him to get behind.
And real quick, what's the highest award?
Highest award is called the Freedom Award.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. And that standard, that staff that I was talking about, it's actually a brass piece that's screwed on top of that standard, and it's just beautiful. So if you ever see a young man walking with a standard and it's got a brass piece on top about 2 inches off the top of that, then you know you've got a young man who's exceptional.
Anything new coming up?
We're doing a summer adventure and convention in 2019 that's going to be huge. But the big things that are going on is as we're kind of reaching this critical mass point, people are starting to hear about Trail Life USA. We're seeing tremendous growth. We are at 48 states for the longest time. And yesterday I got an email from the staff while I've been here at NRB saying, we just chartered a troop in Connecticut, so now we're at 49 states. So the growth that we're seeing is dynamic. And the stories that we're getting, the difference that we're making in boys, that's always big news to us.
And real quick, there's a girls' equivalent, right?
There is. The American Heritage Girls has been around for almost 25 years.
Yes.
They're kind of our big sisters. And a lot of our troops, the Trail Life Troop and the American Heritage Group, girls will meet together, even separate organizations. They'll begin their meeting together, and then they'll split off into their separate programs. So it's a family ministry. That's powerful.
Well, Mark, thank you so much. God bless you. Great to get an update on what you're doing. We've been talking with Mark Hancock, the Trail Life USA CEO. Wonderful organization. Highly recommend you go take a look. I've Russ Jones, been sitting in for Tony Perkins. We've been live here this week from the National Religious Broadcasters Convention in Nashville. I leave you with this, and it's the Trail Life Scripture, Colossians 1:10, that you may walk worthy of the Lord, fully pleased in Him, being fruitful in every good work and increasing in the knowledge of God. Lord willing, we'll see you on Monday.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. Again, that's 1-866-372-7234.